Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Movie Geeks United Sundance Film Festival Spotlight for Adam Green's Frozen. Three friends are trapped on a ski lift, stranded for a weekend high above ground in a blizzard, and the choices they make could prove more terrifying than the prospect of freezing to death. This is the premise of writer-director Adam Green's new film, Frozen, which celebrates its Sundance Film Festival premiere on Sunday, January 24th at 11:59 p.m., followed by additional showings on the 26th, 28th, 29th, and 30th, before opening in limited release on February 5th. Now, we last spoke with Adam as his cult favorite Hatchet was being released. Here in this interview, Adam tells us about his growth as an artist, the challenges of Frozen, and his upcoming shoot for Hatchet 2. You were here, actually. Last time you were here was for Hatchet a couple of years back.
Oh, okay.
And we love that movie.
Yeah, I just watched it again last night.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, with every project, because you've directed several things in between Hatchet and this new one, Frozen, do you feel like a kind of a stepping stone that allows the next one to happen for you, the next project?
Sort of. I mean, with anything, your next project is usually sort of based on how well the last one did or how well it was received. Because as soon as you make one that isn't well-received and doesn't make money, then you're sort of in jail for a little while. Thankfully, everything I've done so far has been well-received, and it's got me that next step. What's been difficult, though, is that I want to do different things every time. Mm-hmm. And when Hatchet became a success, it would have been very easy to sort of go after one of these, like, slasher remakes or something that my heart was not in and I didn't want to do.
Right.
And instead I did something like Spiral, which was an art house film.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were like, why would you do that? But that's what I wanted to do. So I've been very lucky that I have my own company and I've been able to make my own movies. And I mean, especially right now in this economy, I have friends, like high profile director friends, who haven't made a movie in 6-7 years.
Mm.
And in the past 4 years, I think Hatchet 2 is going to be my
mm-hmm.
fifth movie in 4 years.
Excuse me, Adam. So speaking about that, because you speak about as a director, you know, people expect you just to basically make the same thing. It doesn't matter what your field is. People just expect you to stay in that genre forever. And you obviously have a lot of different tales you want to tell. And they're not confined just to the horror genre. How hard do you find it, though, you just came up with something so off the wall that was outside that. Do you meet a lot of resistance?
Yeah, to some extent. Not so much with my fan base, though, which I think is great. One of the things I think I did right is that I'm always making the short films and things for my website.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always putting out new content for my fans, so they're very willing to switch gears with me when I do something different.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't have that, and when they try to do something different, the fans revolt against them and won't support it.
Right.
So I'm lucky there, but within the Hollywood system, once you've made something, that's what you're known for. And it's even as bad as, like, if you're a director of photography, for instance, and you're up to shoot a car commercial, they'll look at your reel and they'll see you've shot for every car dealership in the world. You've shot every car there is. But, however, they are advertising a red Ford, and
mm-hmm.
you don't have a red Ford on your reel, you couldn't possibly be able to shoot this. And that's sort of where I find myself. Like, after Hatchet, the only thing I could possibly do would be a horror comedy. Yet I had a romantic comedy that had Chris Columbus attached to produce it and a very big star attached to be in it, but nobody really understood that I could do it. And my point to them was always, all right, so with Hatchet, I had no support, I had no money. I made a movie that was shot in the equivalent of about 12 days with underwater photography and live alligators and lighting dudes on fire and makeup effects and water towers and an ensemble cast and stunts and all this other stuff. But there's no way that I could possibly handle cute people saying cute things in a room. Like, I would just suddenly drop the ball and be like, I can't do this. How do you cover this?
Yeah, no. Yeah.
That's how they think in Hollywood, though, because they have to justify their decisions by saying, well, we hired this guy because he already made this movie once. So
yeah.
That's very disenchanting about the system.
Oh, of course.
Well, I think it's also indicative of the movies that you see coming out of Hollywood, and so many of them are the same version of everything you've already seen.
Yeah.
You know, it's carbon copies.
Well, the biggest problem is over the past kind of 15, 20 years, Hollywood has changed to this very corporate world where the studios are no longer studios, but they're owned by corporations. So it's not like you have these movie moguls who are making decisions, who are these like wheeler dealer movie maker producers like it used to be. Now they're answering to like Nabisco. And the only way to justify their job is to say, okay, we picked up this property because it's a remake and the first one grossed X, so this is why this property makes sense. We've hired this director because he already directed a movie that's just like this, which grossed Y, and we have this actor who is on the WB, and therefore, you know, or the CW, whatever that fucking gay channel is now. That's how they do it. It's all math. So that's why my problem, especially with the remakes, is so many people complain about them, but it's because of the fans that we have the remakes. The horror fans need to just fucking admit it finally. They love remakes. They like to bitch about them on the message boards and stuff, but when they open, they are fucking there, man. They're there. Like, there could be an original movie playing right next to it. They would never fucking see the original movie.
No,
they would rather go see, like, the remake of whatever that they know is going to suck, just so they can walk out afterwards and go, that sucked. They just raped my childhood. They fucking, yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
Stop supporting the remakes.
But
that's absolutely right, yeah.
There have been in my lifetime two remakes that do stand out, The Thing and The Fly.
Exactly, yes.
But
you know what? Even in the recent crop of them, there are some of them that I actually do like. I'm not anti-remake, but what I'm anti is the fact that Hollywood has found this like equation that's working for them, and now that's all it is remakes. You cannot get an original horror movie made at a studio level anymore. You just can't do it because the fans won't support it. Where the fuck were the fans for Drag Me to Hell? Finally, Sam Raimi comes back and gives us a gift, and they didn't go. But instead, they went to see the remake of whatever the hell opened around that same time and complained about it. And Hollywood doesn't care if you like it. They just care if you're going to spend money on it. And right now, the equation has been that the fans will only support the remakes. So I like to call bullshit on that whenever I'm at a convention or whatever, and the fans are like, what's up with all the remakes? I'll be like, man, did you see Behind the Mask when it was in theaters? No. Fuck you.
Yeah,
you know, where were you? I was at The Hills Have Eyes 2. Great, good job, man.
Wonderful. Even a sequel, even the original sequel is awful, and Wes Craven will be the first to admit it.
Yeah, I know.
You know, you talk about all the stumbling blocks and the different obstacles that you have to face. Given the whole process of making a movie, how much of that process is joyful for you and satisfying?
I was just talking about this with a friend last night. So little of it is actually joyful once you get to this point. I'm happy when I'm on set and I'm actually directing. I'm happy when the movie's done and I get to show it. I'm happy, you know, there's moments. It's all about those moments. And I think it's just sort of just like life, I guess. But the rest of it is so painful and so awful and such a bad, bad experience. And it's not like I'm ungrateful for it. I would have said this 5 years ago, too, but it's the politics of doing it. And what people don't realize is directing a movie, the actual part, like on set saying this is what the shots are going to be and do it this way, that's like 2% of it. The rest of it is basically like a politician's career. It's like it's just bullshit and dealing with just trying to get the project set up and trying to convince people to give you the money to do it. And that's all the stuff that you don't learn about in film school, and the average person doesn't even realize you have to even do that. You just assume, oh, you had great ideas, so they hired you. Everybody's got great ideas. You have to literally create a project and protect yourself in so many political ways where you can't get removed from it, and they're not going to screw you out of it. It's awful. It's really awful. And then when, at least in the independent world, whenever my movies are done and they're ready to come out, trying to get a distributor to really support the film has never actually happened for me. All the films I've done have had these limited theatrical releases with no financial support behind them. And a movie opens not based on if the movie's any good. Nobody's seen it yet when the day the movie opens. It opens because of how much money they spent on advertising it. So you
right.
buy your opening weekend. And I think the public does get that to some extent. When a movie has a great opening weekend and they're like, the number one movie in America, they paid for that. They didn't. It's not because the movie was so good. Nobody knew yet. So it would be nice for once to have like a place like, for instance, Anchor Bay, who is putting out Frozen again,
mm-hmm.
to have them step up to the plate when they lucked out and they got a movie that's in Sundance, that's getting rave reviews, that's like a very big movie potentially.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to see them spend some money and advertise it.
Oh, of course.
Let's talk a little bit about Frozen because this is a change of pace for you. And I look at the project and I think, man, this. Did you have any idea when you conceived this idea how challenging it would actually be to pull off?
No, in fact, I went into the office that morning and I said, guys, I got this idea. It'll be so easy. It's just three people in a chair, and we'll just shoot it ourselves, and we'll do it like dirt cheap. We'll make it for like $200,000, and it'll be so easy, and it'll be awesome, and it's such a good concept. And everybody was like, yeah. Then I wrote it, and we all started looking at it. I'm like, we need millions of dollars to do this. This is insane. There's no way to do this. It's impossible. Nobody's ever shot this before. And at that point, I wanted to actually give the script to another director. And I was, my romantic comedy was going. I was going to be like, here, dude, this is your problem. Then the romantic comedy stalled because the studio went bankrupt. And I said, oh, give me that back. And we started it, and you know it's funny because I had to put on this like tough face the whole time about we're shooting the whole thing practically because this is the right way to do it, and it was the right way to do it, but I was terrified. Like, I don't like to go outside. I don't like to do anything like that. Like, I'd like to sit on the couch with my cats and my Xbox and my fiance, and that's it. Like, I don't even like to talk to people for the most part, and now to have to be dangling from a cable 50 feet in the air at 10,000 feet on the side of a mountain in a blizzard, shooting this stuff that was so dangerous. I mean, the whole movie, all of us were in danger the whole time. And even finding a company to bond the film and insure it, nobody wanted to touch this because it was insane. And it definitely worked out, though, because when you see the movie, you know, audiences are a lot smarter than I think Hollywood gives them credit for. You know when it's a green screen. You know when they're on a soundstage. And for a survival horror movie, you couldn't have that. The audience had to watch the cast go through it, and thankfully I found three cast members that were willing to step up to the task, because it was, nothing will ever be harder that I ever shoot, which you'd think now if I go out for that romantic comedy and they're like, but could he shoot cute people saying cute things in a diner? Like,
well, I think that's a given. I think you could do that in your sleep, but...
with Frozen, was it a challenge for you to, not a challenge, but the easy way to go would have been in a studio. So you were obviously going for the authenticity of that experience.
Yeah, I wanted it to be a very visceral, very intense experience for the audience, and that's been the most rewarding thing so far with any of the early screenings, is that people hear the concept and they're like, okay, great concept, but how is that going to be a feature? How are you going to sustain people for 90 minutes if it's three people in a chair? And then they quickly realize, okay, wait, that's not really what it is. And before you know it, it's over. And it's very, very intense. I mean, it definitely, as far as I'm concerned, makes Hatchet and Spiral and all the other ones look like student films. It's by far my best thing yet. It's definitely the most adult, the most mature, and a lot of the people who have come to these early screenings were Hatchet fans, and they were expecting to laugh and see, you know, and this is definitely got the gore and it delivers the goods, but it's in a very realistic way as opposed to Hatchet, which was a very fun way.
Yeah.
And watching some people have to walk out, watching that girl faint in Austin last Saturday night was amazing.
How was the Austin? How was the BNAT?
It was great, but the thing that people need to remember is, like, you know, the reviews from that have been like, oh, my God, it was so intense, it was so scary that a girl fainted and people had to walk out and stand outside because they couldn't take it. they're not a genre audience necessarily. Like, BNAT is like everybody. It's people that are there to see Disney movies sometimes. Like, they don't know what they're going to get.
Right.
And so when Frozen started, they didn't know what it was. They didn't know anything about it. They didn't know what it was about. All I did is say, this is my new movie. Here's Frozen. Enjoy it. And so the movie starts, and for the first 30 minutes, they were kind of like, laughing along with the characters and the jokes, and it didn't help that they programmed the trailer for, like, Hot Dog the movie before it, so everybody assumed it was going to be a comedy, and then all of a sudden...
But that was Harry thinking he was clever.
Yes, it was. So they were laughing, and then the chair gets stuck, you know, about 20 minutes into the movie, and the panic that started rushing through the crowd was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just standing around, like, watching everybody, like, starting to sweat and cover their eyes. And then, like, the lights go out on the mountain. You realize, like, how fucked these kids are. And then from that point on, it was just, I mean, the vocal reactions from people just yelling and upset. And it was, oh, it was so great.
That's got to be the most satisfying part of the whole experience.
Yeah.
It always is. And that's, yeah. I mean, and that's why comedy, I think, is such a great thing to do, because you get that instant gratification. You hear the laugh right away, and you know if it's working. With something like Frozen, there's a lot of uncomfortable laughter once the movie really kicks in, but you don't really know until the end, and even the end is a very somber ending, and it's not the type of movie where you're necessarily going to, like, stand up and cheer when it's over, like Hatchet. It's the type of thing that you're kind of left devastated and just sitting there,
mm-hmm.
and but that's been great to watch, too.
You know, when you sit down and write a Frozen or any script that can fall into the suspense horror kind of genre, do you go on your own fears? I mean, I would think with Frozen it would be fear of isolation or heights or, you know, any of that stuff.
Yeah, I basically stopped skiing. I gave up skiing, like, right toward the end of high school because I kept thinking about the situation. And even the ski mountains that we scouted throughout America when we were getting ready to make the movie all admitted that this very well could happen. And it's sort of like, it's the perfect storm of human error and mistakes that winds up with them left in the situation, but it could actually happen, and it has happened. Never to the extent that it goes in the film, but everything in the movie is realistic, which is funny. There was one of the reviews from Butnumathon was just saying all the logic errors in the movie, but they didn't name one. They said it's filled with logic errors, but they didn't name one. And there's two logic errors in the movie, which once the movie's out, I'll tell people what they are, but it's not stuff that anybody even notices or would care about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the mountains that I grew up in and skiing at in New England, they were only open Friday through Sunday, and then they would close for the week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a carnival. There's like some guy standing there smoking cigarettes who's letting you go up the lift. That, your life is in that guy's hands. How do you know they're really going to do their job right and make sure that you get off the chair? And especially when, even in modern day, the way that they do it is they put a red flag on a chair and they have somebody else up at the top who's not allowed to leave until they see that red flag come through, and that means that the lift is clear. But what happens if somebody gets on after that flag and the guy at the top didn't know? So the mountains had, like, security meetings about it, and it, like, everybody was very scared when they read the premise of the movie because it could actually happen. And, of course, the ski mountains in Park City are not happy that Sundance is playing this movie because they're afraid it's going to hurt their business, which is hilarious.
Tell me about Sundance, because this has got to be a big thrill for you, the biggest festival accepts your film, and what are your feelings about that?
Well, it's kind of twofold. Like, first of all, it's a skiing thriller that was shot in Utah. If we hadn't gotten in, how much would this movie suck? Like, there's that one, which we were definitely scared about. And then, I mean, at the same time, it's extremely validating. And a lot of it feels like karma, because I went out on a limb and sacrificed a lot to help Paul Sollett make his movie Grace. And then Grace got into Sundance. So I was
mm-hmm.
there last year for Grace thinking, holy shit, this is so awesome. This guy's first movie, he gets to go to Sundance. And so here we are the very next year, and I get to go. So it's really cool.
You've been involved in a few film festivals, of course, but I'm curious, what different personalities do these festivals have? I mean, how does a Sundance, the crowds at Sundance, compare personality-wise to the crowds at a Butnumathon?
Let's see. Well, it's like Sundance is a very it's a big festival, and so it's a lot of, it's basically like Hollywood infiltrates Park City for a week and just makes it suck. They like it, it's all the studio people and the producers and it's like this whole big like deal. Whereas when you go to something like Fantastic Fest or Buttonhamathon or even Tribeca to some extent, it's much more film fan savvy and not so Hollywood corporate and professional. But at the same time, that's one of the great things about Sundance is very important people are seeing your work there, and just the fact that you get nominated, get selected for it, is already like a huge like big boost in career, because instantly, like 2 weeks ago, nobody really cared about Frozen. All of a sudden, it gets selected for Sundance, and like my agent's phone is ringing off the hook. Everybody wants to work with me. Everybody wants.
Well, no, that's awesome.
But that's what. But again, they could justify working with me because they could explain to Nabisco, who makes cookies, that I had a movie at Sundance. So that's how absurd the system is.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I agree with you there, and it's funny. You know, Sundance, like 15 years ago, people didn't. All right, even not 15, or 20 years ago, people didn't really even know what Sundance was. It wasn't really until the mid 90s where Sundance becomes this everyday word in everyone's vocabulary. But you're right. It is now. It is where everyone goes.
Yeah.
It's no longer the indie, like, film dream. It's, like, it's all corporate.
Yeah. And it's – I got to give Sundance kudos, though, on the fact that they are still actually programming independent films, because for a while there was a feeling that you'd see the movies that were being selected, and you're like, that one already has distribution through Warner Brothers. That one already has this or that. And then when Grace got in, we literally, just like everybody else, filled out the form on the website and sent a screener. And I told Paul Solid, I'm like, dude, this is never going to get into Sundance. Don't even ask about it every day. Don't say, have we heard? Just pretend it didn't get in. And then I got home from a Guar concert. It's like 1:30 in the morning. I have purple shit coming out of my ears, and I'm all covered. And I get a voicemail that from Sundance that Grace was selected. And it was amazing. And they do still believe in independent movies, and I think that they're one of the few that does that. My favorite festival of all time, though, is Fright Fest in the UK. It's five days, and the fans, in like 2 months before, line up for like 2 days and stand in the rain to buy their tickets, and you get a seat, and that's your seat for the whole festival. And for five days, for about 12, 16 hours a day, they just sit there and they watch movie after movie after movie, and it's the programming is amazing. And the fan base comes from all over the world, so you have, like, the most, like, hardcore horror fans there. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about Sundance a couple of weeks ago, and it's still as relevant as it's ever been, because you look at the films that are receiving acclaim this year, and they all started that buzz at Sundance. So movies like Precious, and, I mean, you go on and on and on. We've actually spoken to Kevin, who's in your movie Frozen.
Oh, cool.
And we enjoyed our conversation with him very much. And I know before that with Hatchet and Spiral, you were with Joel Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really taken off with, you know, the biggest movie of all time.
I've had my Joel Moore fill this week between Bones, Avatar, and Hatchet.
It's
and I
funny,
know
that
in a bad way. I love Joel. He's great.
I'm trying to keep him real, so I just keep saying, I'm like, dude, come on, man. Avatar, whatever. Whatever. Meanwhile, I have my Joel Moore action figures over my computer. I have, like, two sets. I have the ones that are in the box. I have the ones that are out of the box. And it's really fun to actually have an action figure of him now, because now when I get mad at him, I can make him do disgusting things with Kiss.
that is quite wild. I have a question for you, though.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you, because we go back to, like, the great days of thrash metal and everything, and I just wanted to ask you, what are the similarities between the horror fan and the metal fan?
They are almost identical.
I knew you were going to say that. Okay. I was afraid you were going to say that. But okay.
They're very much the same. Oh, God, I mean, I could write a book on this. It's hilarious how much they're the same. For instance, on the negative side, when you go to a show, the guy in the Pantera shirt is always the asshole. He's always the guy, like, who wants to, like, He doesn't know how to mosh. He just wants to throw punches. He's got to be tougher and more angry than everybody else there. And, like, I love Pantera, but, like, I don't wear the shirt because I don't want to be the asshole.
That's
horror
right.
fans are the same way. And I don't want to say which directors and which movies, but there's certain movies and certain directors where you see the kid in that shirt, they're the asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there because they just want to say the most shocking things and see the most fucked up things. They're rude to the other kids in line. They're dicks when they come up for their autographs. And you can tell by the shirt they're wearing. Whereas when you see the kid in the Hatchet Army shirt, they're always the nicest people. It's like
mm-hmm.
the good kids in school type thing. Yet Hatchet was the movie that the MPAA went after as being so despicable, and it attracts an audience of very nice, normal people. And maybe it's me, maybe it's the movie, I don't know, but there's that similarity to music. Then there's the fact that just like music fans, the horror fans will follow a movie or a director. I've had some fans when I'm touring, doing different conventions, they'll come to all of them. And then they'll wait in the line to meet you for 3 hours, even
mm-hmm.
though they just met you the weekend before, and they don't care. And that's
mm-hmm.
very similar. But even, you know, all of my sort of speeches and showmanship thing, it's all ripped off from Dee Snider, like completely, like word for word. Some of the stuff I say, I don't know it when I'm saying it, but afterwards I'm like, where did I come up with that? Then I listen to a record. I'm like, that's exactly what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Like I made the whole audience at Fright Fest, like, out loud promise not to videotape the screen when I showed them some exclusive footage from Frozen, and literally word for word it was from like a Twisted show from 82. And
wow, okay.
It's my roots are very much from there, which is funny when people ask who your biggest influence is and they're expecting to hear, you know, John Carpenter or Wes Craven. It's like, well, Dee Snider and you know, James Hetfield and
mm-hmm.
like that.
Right.
You talk about the loyalty of the fans. But amongst people that work in this genre, the creative people, the directors, the filmmakers, are they supportive of one another, as you've observed?
Some of them are, but some of them are more like frenemies. They'll be really supportive, but behind your back, they're like, I just don't fucking get it. Why do people like that guy's movie so much? And like, my movie was so much better, and nobody cares. I just don't get it. And then they'll start saying, like, oh, yo, he only got those reviews because he paid him off, or he got this, or he got that. So you're really cautious. Like, my circle of people that I ultimately, like, completely trust 100% is maybe five people.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them, they're cool. It's fun to hang out with them. I'm very supportive of them. But you get a certain vibe of, like, jealousy or whatever, which I've seen happen with people that are more successful than I am. Because they have that success, because their movies are getting the wide release, everyone instantly hates them. And they're a dick, and they're this, and they're that. No, they're not, dude. They lucked out. Like, just,
yeah.
And hopefully it'll happen for you, too. But this genre, more than any of them, everybody thinks because they're a fan that they can do it and that they should do it. And same principles of storytelling and filmmaking apply to the horror genre as any genre.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you have so many people that keep announcing movies they're doing, and they're bringing horror back, and they're going to do this and that, but they don't actually deliver on any of it. They don't get the movies made. They don't make good movies. Or there's a certain percentage of horror fans who think that as long as it's violent and shocking, that makes it the best horror movie ever. Like, theirs is going to be so much nastier than what you've seen before. That doesn't make a good movie. And I think I proved that with Hatchet, because our deaths were way better than most, but the movie excelled on its entertainment value. The fact that it was fun.
Yeah.
It was, if it had only had those gore scenes, it would have been a shit film. And yet some reviews say the only thing going for it was the gore scenes. So I don't know, but you got to be entertaining and not punish your audience. And there's some people out there that, especially when the torture thing was big, I mean, You could literally take, like, my cats, and they could come up with, like, a sick way to torture somebody. That doesn't mean they should make a movie.
Right.
You just kept seeing stuff that you're like, okay, why am I watching this right now? This is not entertaining.
Exactly.
And that's sort of where the horror community, I guess, of directors gets divided, because there's some you just can't really respect because they're not actually making movies. They're just throwing sick ideas out there. And then you got other ones that just don't ever actually get anything made but want to criticize everybody and
mm-hmm.
hang out with all the directors, and they're kind of disgusting too. So it's
mm-hmm.
it's kind of weird.
Well, this one seems, Frozen seems to work not only on the situation, but on on character and kind of that you're in there in kind of such a claustrophobic environment, even though it's in the open mountains, with these characters, and you're invested in
Lifeboat from everything I've read so far.
Yeah, Lifeboat and Rope were my two influences for this movie, but everybody goes to open water, and like I hate saying this because my producer, Peter Block, did open water. I didn't really like open water. I loved the setup, and it was cool that there were sharks, but in my opinion, open water was a gimmick movie, and it was all about, look at the sharks. But I didn't like the people in it, and I didn't care, and once they were stranded, they were dead. So
they're yuppies. No one cared about them.
No, and I had to wait and watch until they finally were both dead, and then when it was over, I said, that was a big waste of my time. There is hope in Frozen, especially in their hearts and who they are, and their character arcs are enormous, especially Sean Ashmore, who his, without ruining anything, he's sort of painted one way and ends up very, very different. And I think that's why I got such high caliber actors, is because they were like, this is 90 minutes of my face on the screen doing extremely dramatic acting. This chance isn't going to come around too often. So, yeah, it's worth it to be suspended in the air and freezing my ass off. and I went through it with them. My deal with them was when they were up in the chair, I would stand where they could see me. I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't drink. I wouldn't sit down. I wouldn't be in just as much pain as they were. And I think that we bonded through that, because at least they weren't sitting up there looking down and seeing me in like a chair with like macaroni and cheese and a hot cup of coffee or something like that, which the rest of the crew did, but not me.
So what's coming up next for you? What do you hope to get off the ground next?
Well, we start shooting Hatchet 2 in 2 weeks, and
wow.
I'm actually...
Oh, that's soon, okay.
Yeah, the plan was to surprise everybody and not tell them we were doing Hatchet 2 until we were done shooting it, which would have been Sundance. And right at Sundance, when people said, what's next, I was going to announce and say, well, we just finished Hatchet 2, and everyone would be like, what? Because they've been asking for it for so long, and we finally, kind of over the summer started making all the calls, like getting the band back together, but it was all very like private, and nobody talked about it, and it was all kept on the down low. But then for one of the parts, we had to post in the casting breakdowns, and one of the horror sites is so shady that they actually have login info to the casting announcements so that they can see what's coming up, and they saw that I was attached to direct Hatchet 2 and went and announced it, and that was it. So yeah, but we start shooting in 2 weeks, and it'll be out next fall.
Wonderful.
Well, we both love Hatchet, so and it's such a, as you've already described, such a kind of extreme fun movie. So what was the biggest challenge of putting together a sequel to that?
The biggest honest challenge of the sequel was first of all, I had the sequel basically done in my head before we shot the first one, so there was a lot of things set up in the first one that are going to pay off in the second one, which I'm really excited about. But the first one was really just me making the type of movie that I wanted to see, and now this time it's not really about me anymore, it's about the fans that embraced it, so I had to come at this one not as selfishly as I did with the first one, but thinking, okay, what do they want, what do I need to do to beat the first one and deliver the goods. So it's still the same story I always wanted to do, but I listened to the fans and sort of, anybody who's read it who was a fan has been very surprised by how good it actually is, because it's not just, a new group of tourists goes in the swamp and he's going to kill them again. It's a very big story, and it really complements the first one. Almost to the point that hopefully eventually there's a version that's just both movies cut together as one movie, because it's not really a sequel. It's more just like the second part. I mean, it literally starts on the same shot that we ended on, which was such a gamble because that ending was very controversial with people. Mm-hmm. Some people were like, what the fuck? Are you serious? Like, they're just going to cut?
Yeah.
But I was like, no, because in the sequel, we're going to start right here and keep going. And everyone's like, what if they don't make a sequel? What if the movie's not a hit? What if it never even comes out? I'm like, I'm gambling. And thankfully, we get to go back and do it again. But that movie, because it was the first for a lot of us, and because it was so special to us, the fact that 5 years later we're going to be standing on the same set all together again is going to be really one of, again, like I was talking about before, you have moments in this career, like that's going to be possibly one of the best moments I'll ever have. Because for all the people who said no to that movie, who said it wouldn't come out, the people who rejected it, the bad reviews, the fans who said it sucked, when you're making a sequel, it's undeniable that the first one, at least financially, was a very big hit. And this is quite validating to get to go back and do it again. We'll be right back.